From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, it's the final days before the election, and in this red state, there are some races that are nail-biters.
Right now, we don't really have any long-term data on the 23rd other than it flip-flops back and forth.
A look at how Latino voters are changing elections and what's important to them.
We're rounded up in Colorado and Texas and basically shipped back to Mexico.
And right next door, New Mexico, politics there are very different than politics in Texas.
In this election, support candidates who support our governor. Vote early and let's stop giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The 23rd Congressional District of Texas is one of the largest districts in the nation, running along 800 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. It's larger than Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Delaware combined. But winning the seat means more than adding one more party vote in Congress. It's a window into the future of politics in Texas.
Get your friends up to vote.
Saturday, 2 days before the early voting polls open, and the campaign headquarters for Republican Congressman Francisco Kiko Canseco is focused on GOTV, Get Out the Vote. There are over 75 volunteers in this North San Antonio office. Most are wearing matching Canseco for Congress t-shirts. Some have been block walking, others are working the phone bank and delivering a scripted message about Canseco. In one corner, Senator John Cornyn is also making a couple of calls.
Do you plan on voting for Romney and Canseco or Pete Gallego? Great.
Cornyn's here to give volunteers a pep talk and to remind them that keeping the 23rd in Republican hands is a party priority.
This is ground zero. The Democrats want this seat worse than they want any other congressional seat in the country.
And the candidate himself tells the volunteers the Democrats want to win back the 23rd so badly because he won it 2 years ago by just 7,500 votes in the Tea Party tsunami.
And all of us know what the issues are at stake. They have not been greater, not even in the lives of our great-grandparents.
And since that 2010 election, lines for the 23rd district were redrawn, likely making it harder for Democrats to cover that vote difference. Court battles over the new lines have found that the new 23rd was deliberately gerrymandered to hurt Latino voters. And that's something that Democratic challenger State Representative Pete Gallego points out.
A lot of the Latinos that had a high history of turnout were taken out of the district and replaced with Latinos who have a low history of turnout. So it's clearly a turnout question.
Gallego's campaign headquarters is very different from Canseco's, located on the opposite side of San Antonio, where the rent is much lower, just like the incomes of the Hispanic majority in this neighborhood. And inside, Gallego holds a press conference. In his soft-spoken manner, he's blasting Canseco for using Catholic icons in campaign material to attack him for being pro-choice and pro-same-sex marriage, two issues that could cleave the socially conservative Mexican-American majority in the district.
My fear is this. If this kind of stuff works, then everybody will do it. And once everybody does it, our society will have sunk to a new low.
When asked about the use of these sacred images, Canseco is unapologetic.
You're going to see us campaigning hard and campaigning well, and I think that come November 6th, we're going to have victory.
Someone is going to have a November 6th victory, but Henry Flores, a political science professor at St. Mary's University in San Antonio, says he's not sure who that's going to be.
I think this thing is up for grabs.
Flores says the district is very racially polarized, and these racial lines play a big part in how people vote and who wins elections here, even though two Latinos are on the ballot.
The Anglo-Republicans turn out at higher rates than the Latino Democrats, and that's really why they refer to it as a Republican leading district.
It's my great pleasure to introduce to all of you and my mom, the 42nd President of the United States.
Another sign that a congressional race is tight is when former President Bill Clinton flies in for a rally.
This is about whether you think a political philosophy that says we're all in this together is better than your own.
And this is the third time since 2006 that Clinton has come to rally Democrats for this district, even though on his last visit he couldn't stop that 2010 Canseco victory. But Clinton told the crowd that things in Texas are changing.
There is no doubt in my mind that if every single person in Texas who was eligible to vote registered and voted, this would be a Democratic state.
The way the 23rd's demographics look today is how the rest of Texas is going to look in the near future. Texas is already a minority-majority state, but without Latino GOTV, Clinton's hopes of turning Texas blue will fade. While there's growing suspense and excitement for the national races, like the White House and some key Senate and congressional seats, in Texas, November 6th is going to be ho-hum and pretty predictable. But political junkies like Quorum Report's Harvey Kronberg will still find those vote tallies darn interesting.
If you look at the early voting, at least up until the last 48 hours, there's certainly been an enthusiasm and an organization gap on the Democratic side. Counties that traditionally trend Democratic seem to have are not setting records, whereas Republican trending or Republican suburban counties are. It does have some consequence down ballot, but because of the way things are structured, there's really only two congressional races that are of any interest that are even remotely competitive, one state Senate race and maybe nine House races. And they can all be impacted by what happens at the top of the table.
But this is not a barn burner for Texas.
Not as far as Texas politics go. First of all, it's the first year after redistricting, and redistricting is always done to favor the party in power. So that obviously means that the maps are pro-Republican, obviously. Second, there's no money being spent in Texas. In fact, Texas is a net contributor, not a net recipient. So there's no infrastructure, organization, or get-out-the-vote effort of any consequence that's being conducted statewide.
Does it matter? Should we wonder how big Romney will win in Texas?
Well, yes, that does have some long-term consequence. No Democrat since 1998 has scored above 44% statewide, with the exception of one judicial race. So if Obama scored 44% back in 2008, if the most recent polls in Texas are to be believed, he is underperforming 4 years ago. However, if he were to have a late surge in Texas and get maybe to 45 or 46%, at least Democrats would have something to point to say things are trending their way.
Now, earlier you said there were two congressional races in Texas that you thought were up for grabs. Which ones are you looking at?
The one that has always been on the table is out in West Texas, first-term Republican Congressman Francisco Kiko Canseco versus 20-year state rep Pete Gallego. The other race that we're watching is a little bit of a surprise race. On paper, it should be a safe Republican district. It's in the Houston-Pasadena area. And pits Randy Weber, a state representative, against former Democratic Congressman Nick Lampson.
Now, this is the old Ron Paul seat.
That's exactly correct. It was Ron Paul's seat. It on paper looks like it's a 56% Republican district, but it has a big minority population and reaches into some, ironically, other down-ballot contests that that may drive turnout. For instance, it reaches into the Galveston area where there is at least some prospect the Democrat is going to outperform, the Democratic incumbent is going to outperform the Republican challenger because of the Democrat's role in helping save UTMB, the medical school in Galveston, after Hurricane Ike. So there's plus the former Congressman Nick Lampson is got pretty good name identification. He's a classical conservative Democrat, so he's been pro-business. And the national money didn't really see this as a substantial challenge until the final, maybe 3 weeks ago, when they suddenly started seeing polling show that Lampson was competitive against Weber. And Weber has raised a substantial amount of money, but he had a primary. He had a primary runoff, and now he's got a challenge in the final 3 weeks. And that one is also, even though it doesn't look like it on paper, is a toss-up.
in the Texas House? Are we going to see a change in significant of the number of Democrats versus Republicans?
I think that we're probably going to, what have we got, 102 Republicans now. We're probably going to see them drop down into the mid-90s. That was an unsustainable, even the most imaginative redistricting pen could probably not have held more than 100 Republican seats. And the courts have not been particularly sympathetic to Texas redistricting map drawers. It'll probably go down to the mid-90s. What is significant about that is it takes two-thirds or 101 votes or 100 votes to do a constitutional amendment and to suspend House rules. So with more than with 100-plus, Republicans could essentially, if they acted united as a caucus, could rewrite the rules of the House as they went along. Routinely vote to suspend their rules. They didn't do it very often, but the threat was always there. And when you break down below 100, normal rules prevail. That probably puts a little more power back in the speaker's chair and takes a little from the caucus. Adds at least some relevance to the Democrats, who last session were so marginalized as, you hate to say it, but to be all but irrelevant except for a couple of very strong personalities that had deep roots in the House.
Harvey Kronberg is the editor of The Quorum Report, an online newsletter dedicated to Texas politics. It's online at quorumreport.com. New Mexico is not really in play this presidential election. It's expected to go solidly for President Barack Obama, but it still has the potential to take on a larger role in the national debate over immigration. Sarah Gustavus has more on New Mexico's history and current political climate.
New Mexico is big and sparsely populated, with only about 2 million residents. Almost half identified as Hispanic or Latino in the last census. Most are not new immigrants. That translates into a lot of eligible Hispanic voters, which is why Gabriel Sanchez has been all over the media lately, from The Economist to The New York Times.
Probably average about 4 interviews a day, you know, this close to the election.
Sanchez is an associate professor at the University of New Mexico and research director for the national polling organization Latino Decisions.
Even though we're not perceived as a battleground, we're not seeing the candidates come in and pay us a lot of attention this election cycle, a lot of folks are still very interested in what happens in New Mexico, largely because we're viewed as maybe a microcosm of what the future is going to look like in the United States.
Other states with growing Latino populations might look to New Mexico for the future, but to understand politics today, you have to look to the past.
Spain made a lot of cultural contributions.
That's Rick Hendricks, the New Mexico state historian. Many Hispanic families in New Mexico can trace their roots back for generations, sometimes all the way to Spanish colonization. Hendricks says although cultural heritage is significant, this identity was influenced more recently by the Great Depression, when people of Mexican heritage were targeted by the U.S. government.
Many, many Mexican citizens and also people who were U.S. residents, but of Mexican heritage, were rounded up in Colorado and Texas and basically shipped back to Mexico.
Hispanic citizens in New Mexico appear to have protected themselves at that time by saying they were Spanish or Hispanos, not Mexican. Yet these Hispanos continue to identify with more recent immigrants, both legal and illegal, in political debates. Christine Sierra is a professor of political science at UNM.
In general, New Mexico has been much more of a welcoming state and a state that's ready to compromise in various ways, where other states really draw a very clear line between who's here with documents and who's here without, and that the treatment of those people should be very different.
One big example. In 2003, New Mexico enacted a law that allows any immigrant to get a driver's license. They have to prove residency, but not legal status. In recent years, the driver's license issue has tested the idea of tolerance in New Mexico. Supporters say it's good for public safety because all drivers can get insurance and be tracked by law enforcement. Opponents say it's also a public safety issue because licenses could be used for criminal purposes. Republican Governor Susana Martinez has pushed hard to repeal the driver's license policy in 3 legislative sessions. In the past month, the driver's license issue showed up in political ads.
It attracts people from all over the world, some who want to do us harm. Governor Susana Martinez is fighting to repeal the law, but she's being blocked in the legislature. In this election, support candidates who support our governor.
Marcela Diaz is executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido, an immigrants' rights organization in Santa Fe. She says New Mexicans have long had a different debate over issues like driver's licenses than neighboring Arizona, because there's a shared concern about how new laws might impact anyone who looks like a Latino immigrant.
We understand, particularly as Hispanos and Latinos in New Mexico, that a lot of this anti-immigrant sentiment, the anti-immigrant policies, really are not just about immigrants. It really is about a broader electorate.
Washington State is the only other state that has a driver's license policy like New Mexico. Utah offers a driver's card to immigrants without a social security number. But California recently passed a law that allows young immigrants who were brought into the country illegally as children and are now eligible for deferred action to obtain licenses. It's expected that Governor Martinez will once again revisit the driver's license repeal here in January. In Albuquerque, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
Let's stay in New Mexico a little longer. This is a high-stakes election for first-term Republican Governor Susana Martinez, and she's not even running. The country's first Latina governor has seen her legislative agenda consistently blocked by Democrats. To help turn the tide for her, conservative political action committees are spending big money to help win more Republican seats in Santa Fe. Frontera's reporter Monica Ortiz Uribe reports.
The Roundhouse in Santa Fe, New Mexico, faces about the same dilemma as the White House in Washington, only in reverse. Republican Governor Susana Martinez has been unable to advance the top items on her legislative agenda. The most talked about issue is the repeal of a law that allows illegal immigrants to obtain a New Mexico driver's license.
In this election, support candidates who support our governor. Vote early and let's stop giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants.
That's a TV ad produced by Reform New Mexico Now, one of two political action committees, or PACs, run by the governor's head advisor, Jay McCleskey. Combined, they've raised $1.6 million to defeat Democrats in the statewide election. That money is far-reaching, according to political science professor Gabriel Sanchez.
And so what you've seen is an explosion of money in the state of New Mexico across some of these lower-level races. You're not used to seeing TV ads, for example, targeted in the House.
Governor Martinez is fighting races across all the state, some bigger than others, but each just as precious. Here in southern New Mexico, one of her candidates is Republican incumbent Terry McMillan, the state representative for District 37.
How's it going? You here to make an appointment?
McMillan is a well-respected ear, nose, and throat surgeon who stays busy seeing patients at his Las Cruces office. He's running in a well-to-do district in a newer section of New Mexico's second largest city. During his first term in office, he was a solid supporter of Governor Martinez's agenda on education, health care, and the driver's license issue. No independent polls have measured the race, but it's widely understood to be close, though Democrats have about a 6-point voter registration advantage over Republicans.
Mine is a fairly visible and highly contested district. I think about 6 or 8 years ago, candidates might have spent $15,000 or $20,000 running a campaign for this office, and it's 4 or 5 times that is required now.
McMillan has raised nearly $80,000. He's also gotten plenty of PAC support, including those with ties to the governor. In addition to funding, the Reform New Mexico Now PAC sent out mailers in the district targeting his opponent, Democrat Joanne Ferrari. One PAC mailer calls her a radical political activist who supports a policy that invites human traffickers into the state. Not true, says Ferrari, before a recent meeting with fellow Democrats at a local Mexican restaurant. Known locally for her work combating drunk driving, Ferrari comes across as fairly mild-mannered. She actually agrees with Governor Martinez that there needs to be a change in the way driver's licenses are issued in the state, but also thinks undocumented drivers should carry some form of license.
Something that would recognize that people are going to drive and how to identify who that driver is, and that they also would be able to have insurance. Also, we need to make sure that it's not used as an identification that would allow people to have other privileges.
Other privileges, like boarding an airplane or obtaining a license elsewhere. But meeting the governor halfway on this issue is unlikely to fly. As candidate McMillan puts it, if Governor Martinez has her way, the law will be repealed.
She's not someone who's quick to compromise. She's been offered compromises. They were not adequate.
A former district attorney, Governor Martinez is known for tough talk and strict action. Earlier this month, she called the cops on a father who'd left his baby alone in a car parked outside Walgreens. She was there herself running errands and confronted the father with more than a few sharp words. Apparently, her attitude towards disagreeing lawmakers is no different. In Las Cruces, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
Now moving further west into Arizona, young immigrants are watching the presidential election closely. There's a lot at stake with two candidates who have widely different views on the subject. From the Fronteras desk in Flagstaff, Laura Morales reports.
For young people who have grown up in the United States without documents, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, allows them to work legally and in some states attend college at in-state tuition rates. Here's what Republican candidate Mitt Romney says about it.
Some people have asked if I will let stand the president's executive order. The answer is that I will put in place my own long-term solution that will replace and supersede the president's temporary measure.
What will that long-term solution look like? That's what Josue Saldivar would like to know. He came to the United States with his parents and his two sisters when he was 8, soon after his dad was laid off from a factory job in Agua Prieta.
My parents were just looking for a better future for me and my sister.
Saldivar says he didn't understand what it meant to be undocumented until he started applying to college his senior year of high school.
And that's when I realized that although I graduated with a 4.0 GPA, although I was the MVP of the cross country and track team, although I was in the National Honor Society, that wasn't enough for me to be able to walk through the doors of a university.
Josue, like most other immigrant students, needs financial aid to go to college. Most institutions won't loan you money if you don't have a Social Security number. So for the last 4 years, he's taken community college classes in business administration. He qualifies for deferred action, but he's worried about applying.
I kept asking myself, am I putting my family at risk? What's going to happen after I turn in my application?
Deferred action applicants must provide information about their family members to Citizenship and Immigration Services. CIS officials have said the information will only be shared with immigration enforcement if the individual has a criminal record.
The question is not whether the program is eliminated or not. The question is what happens to the people that have applied to that particular program.
Luis Fernandez is a professor at Northern Arizona University and an immigrant advocate. He's also worried about DACA applicants under a possible Romney administration.
Does that mean that hundreds of thousands of people are going to be rounded up and thrown out? Or does that mean that these people are going to be given another 2 years?
Fernandez and other immigrant advocates say Romney's stance on deferred action has discouraged some from applying. Since August, about 180,000 people have applied, according to figures published by the federal government. But only about 4,600 deferrals have been approved because of the avalanche of applications the agency must go through. Alexandra Samarón would like to apply, but she just misses the cutoff age of 15. She was 16 when she came to the United States with her mom.
You just feel floating because you're stuck.
Samarón would like to become a doctor someday and has finished her first 2 years of undergraduate requirements at a community college. She plans to apply to Northern Arizona University in the spring, but she says it's exhausting, constantly being denied scholarships or loans because you don't have a Social Security number. Like many other immigrant students, she'll take one class at a time. None of these students see President Obama's immigration policy as the answer either.
Deferred action is not enough. Yeah, it's like one step, but even if we get a DREAM Act, right, what about our parents? And then we get an immigration reform, but then people are going to keep coming. So that's not the end of it.
And that's why this is an issue that whomever is elected president is going to have to grapple with eventually. I'm Laura Morales in Flagstaff.
The race for Congress in California's 52nd district, pitting incumbent Brian Bilbray against Democratic challenger Scott Peters, is one of the most closely watched elections in the nation. And because Bilbray holds a post that gives him big influence over national immigration policy, young immigrant activists are among the people who are hoping to influence this race's outcome. Fronteras reporter Adrian Florido has the story.
As chairman of the House Immigration Reform Caucus, Republican Brian Bilbray has a lot of power to set Congress's priorities when it comes to U.S. immigration policy. That's why this election, advocates for immigration reform and the DREAM Act, which would give many young undocumented students a path to citizenship, are targeting Bill Bray hard. Here's why.
I think the DREAM Act is a nightmare, and I think that it won't pass. I think that moderate Democrats who join on in the caucus with me will say that's the last thing the American people want to do right now.
In his bid for re-election this year, Bill Bray is vying to represent the newly drawn 52nd Congressional District. It covers affluent coastal and northern San Diego communities. But this year, this new district includes many more Democrats than Bill Bray's old district. So the race against former San Diego City Councilman Scott Peters is unexpectedly close. And that's emboldened national immigrant rights activists to flood the airwaves with Spanish-language radio ads like this one.
Los ciudadanos de San Diego podrán hacerle frente con su voto a las políticas discriminatorias y antimigrantes del congresista Brian Bill Bray.
Pero nosotros no. Somos los soñadores. Los jóvenes.
It calls Bill Bray's policies discriminatory and anti-immigrant. Bill Bray is a hardliner on immigration policy. He frequently calls for more border enforcement and crackdowns on companies that employ undocumented workers. He says policies like the DREAM Act only encourage more illegal immigration. Challenger Scott Peters says he supports the DREAM Act and has said that massive deportations are impractical. But despite San Diego's proximity to the border, Peters has been light on details about how he would address the nation's immigration challenges. This is what he recently told KPBS.
Well, we need a policy that is tough, fair to taxpayers, and practical. I mean, it is a problem.
On a recent afternoon, about a dozen young adults gather outside Bill Bray's district office in Solana Beach, north of San Diego. Most are undocumented students. They've each got a pair of shoes in their hands, sneakers, high heels, sandals, and they're preparing to march into Bill Bray's office to ask his staff to identify who among them is undocumented. Why? In 2010, Bill Bray famously told MSNBC's Chris Matthews that law enforcement could identify undocumented immigrants by their clothes.
Right down to the shoes, right down to the clothes.
Education not deportation!
Education not deportation!
He thinks that you can tell who an undocumented person is by their shoes. We're going to go see if he can actually tell whether their shoes are an undocumented person or not.
That was Erica Andiola. This sort of targeted mobilization by young immigrants is happening across the U.S. this election. America's Voice, a national immigrant rights coalition, has identified 14 congressional races where it hopes its Spanish-language ads will help tip the scale in favor of immigrant-friendly candidates. The latest polling shows Bill Bray and Peters in a dead heat. Bill Bray has endorsements from San Diego's major newspaper, veterans groups, local politicians, and major industrial leaders. Peters has support from labor and environmental groups and immigrant rights activists, of course. But Tom Wong, a University of California San Diego political scientist, says that even if Bill Bray is voted out, more immigrant-friendly policies are unlikely in the near future. Other members of the Immigration Reform Caucus are actually even more conservative. So Wong says,
his removal may actually mean a more restrictive brand of comprehensive immigration reform.
But Wong says there's also symbolism in the Dreamers' efforts. If they can claim a victory, they might mobilize more supporters.
And in that sense, there are sort of deeper benefits to these sorts of struggles, even if there are no immediate policy payoffs.
Payoffs this election cycle may indeed be unlikely. Even the most liberal projections predict Republicans will retain control of the House this year. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. We'd like to hear from you, so send us an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org, and you can subscribe to the free podcast on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.